This is RSVNB Update, episode 567, recorded Thursday, May 19th, 2016. Subjugated Subservient Simians. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSVNB Update this week. It's Dave and myself here.
Hello, hello.
And we're going to talk about invention, new devices, a little bit of Rune Labs, some interesting stuff regarding Facebook and Google, and all of your listener questions this week. It's going to be a very, very interesting week, and I know some of you guys might have an idea of why discussing Rune Labs this week is going to be very interesting, very important, and very exciting, but we'll save that for just a little bit until we get into the core of this episode. So, you got 99 invention. You have 120 invention, yeah?
I do.
Yep. Okay, 120 invention, relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. So, invention tech trees. So, initially when invention came out, these items that were in-game unlocked it. Various invention levels. I think level 60 and then level 78, if I believe, for the secondary tree. So it wasn't exactly something you could get into right away, and there weren't that many devices off the bat. So right. With that being said, what do you think out the gate of this week's invention update?
Right out of the gate, I'm going to say this is an amazing update. This is what I pretty much saw invention as being with all of its potential. When I heard of, you know, when they announced the skill, like right off the bat, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be really cool. You know, we're going to have devices to help us with skilling and all kinds of different, it's going to kind of be like an engineering skill in other MMOs. And then obviously whenever the skill was released, it was pretty much, you know, throw a cog on your weapon and go train Slayer. And, you know, it was a little disappointing. So, you know, coming from the skiller standpoint and even someone who's pretty much already drained invention to its max XP wise, I really like this update. And if they keep going with this this pattern, or you know, these sort of updates, it's really going to be great. So I haven't played around with all of the things, but I've read up on each one, and I think they're definitely going in the right direction, and I'm really excited to see where it goes from here. So kudos to Jagex, definitely.
So you guys might be wondering, what is Dave so excited about? Well, at level 40 invention, you will unlock both of the current tech trees, and that's of course the Dwarven tech tree and the Goblin tech tree. Your primary tech tree will result in you getting more currency when you complete tasks that are given to you by the invention task system, which also came out this week. So this is a little notice board inside the Invention Guild, and each day you get two new tasks every 12 hours, and then by completing these you receive a certain amount of currency for your tech tree. You get more currency for completing tasks in your primary tech tree and less for completing them in your secondary tech tree. So you can work through both at the same time, regardless of which one you chose to spec into first.
Yeah, I will add that the notice boards are also in the Goblin and Dwarven areas as well. So you don't have to go to the guild that's right there in Falador. You can go to either one. And for anybody that's a little confused, really just think about the currency as Slayer points after you do the quest. You know, you unlock it. So, I mean, it's really not that complicated. But yeah, you can access it from all three of the areas, and it's pretty straightforward, honestly. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that is the best way of describing this, is it's the Slayer point store, except for invention. Because every 12 hours you get a new task, and then you can store up to 5 of these to do at the same time. So incorporating a bit from the daily challenges system there as well. And then they can practically include anything from the invention skill. A couple of examples of ones I had to do. I had to hand in 300 plated parts, I believe it was, mm-hmm. and a fishing rod-o-matic for the two that I did right off the bat when I came into this. So that's the kind of things you can expect, just randomly kind of invention ones.
Yep, mine was, I think I had to hand in two equipment dissolvers, and I had to hand in, I think it was 10 heavy components.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Yeah.
I also have ones to do that are the two equipment dissolvers and also three junk refiners. So mm-hmm. basically, it is forcing you to experience and use invention in order to get this currency. And then as you're doing that, you just look at a tech tree. And for anyone who's played other MMOs or other games, you are well aware of what tech trees are. You need to progress through them to unlock things at the end. And then when you unlock these, you basically discover them the same way you discover anything else for invention. So very interesting, I think, from the tech tree perspective. And like you said, if this had been part of invention when it came out, I think we might have seen a different reaction to mm-hmm. the skill.
Because I think it would have been a lot more well-received. You know, and I've always sort of been against, you know, just releasing something to get it out when it's not finished. Not to say it wasn't finished, but, you know, it can really reflect sort of how the gaming industry is these days anymore. Especially, you know, EA, they release like a shell of a game, and then, you know, the core of the game is pretty much the DLC. So they kind of release an incomplete piece of content and fill it in. You know, it's obviously different in an MMO. But, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people were turned off of invention, including myself to begin with. If I wasn't just trying to go for max and comp, I really wouldn't have touched it, because it was seriously just kind of a glorified Slayer. You know, there really wasn't any skilling aspects of it other than like the mining accumulator and just the little stuff that really was kind of a glorified urn at that. So, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that, you know, it's taken them, you know, 2-3 months to really sort of crank out the full potential and, you know, kind of show the community what this skill is capable of. But alas, it's here, and we're moving forward. So, like I said, I'm really looking forward to where this is going. So,
yeah, and I mean, you have Dwarven and Goblin currently. So imagine going down the path. You could have, you know, for example, Elven tech or Gnome tech, or, you mm-hmm. know, maybe even Human tech, though I guess, isn't that what invention is, human-based?
Yeah, I think it's originally okay. It's human, yeah.
Well, maybe something else then. I don't know, Tazar maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Or...
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, they can really almost go with any race, and I think that's kind of what they're doing. I think they're, you know, they're showcasing the fact that, you know, you can go down one, or, you know, one path or the other path, and then it honestly wouldn't surprise me if, you know, towards the end of the year, we'll see another one. Like you said, Elven or Gnome. I think that'll be really cool. But I do agree with them not just throwing everything in. I still think that this should have been on release. But I like the idea of keeping it fresh. You know, maybe every 3-4 months we'll get a new tech tree and they can just trickle stuff in. And I think, you know, that's really the way it should go. So,
yeah, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing it this way. It's just, you know, I think that, as we said, it kind of created the impression that we were hoping for a full-fledged skill when this came out. But obviously, we're getting there now. And,
right.
you know, for anyone who has that as a major detracting point about invention, I'd like to remind you guys that for, I think, the first 6 or 8 months after Hunter's release, the highest thing was level 73, and that was the Imp in a Box. So mm-hmm. there have been other skills that have been neglected for far longer than invention.
Oh,
was.
Absolutely.
So it's, yeah, it's
I mean, even
not,
Dungeoneering as well, you know, because
right?
we didn't have our warp floors or even our occult. You know, the highest one was the Abandoned 2, you know, floor 35 or 38.
Which
or,
is
you know,
level 80 or so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, summoning, as we all know, was in 2 batches. So, but I mean, they kind of announced that was going to happen,
yeah,
which is a little bit different. But
I mean summoning was completely changed too.
Right.
So, I don't think we're in the territory of, you know, summoning, Dungeoneering, or Hunter yet for the lack of content mm-hmm. in invention. And as you said, it comes down to what the general gaming industry feels like today, as in, let's just put something out. But, I mean, obviously, RuneScape players are different than the general gaming industry, because that is not the way RuneScape has ever worked.
No, it's not.
So,
and we'd like to keep it that way. So,
yeah, it's part of the unique charm of the game.
Absolutely.
So, now with that being said, you went down the Goblin tree, right?
I did.
Yeah. Okay. So, I have two questions for you. Do you feel as though the tasks are fair in terms of what they're asking you to give into the master, whatever the guy's name is, at either place for what you get? Do you think it's a fair investment?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty basic, and I think the whole idea here is to sort of introduce people into the skill, like we had discussed on previous episodes, sort of a tutorial, but not a tutorial, just kind of a hold your hand and here, this is what you can do to learn, but also it's going to be beneficial to high-level players. You know, I really think that handing in a certain amount of components, I mean, anybody that's sort of even above level 50 or so is going to have a lot of these components already, and if not, it's a simple just go buy it or go make it. Like for my heavy components, I didn't have too many of them. You know, being 120, I just went and I bought, you know, 20, 30 Addy Warhammers and I got it. You know, it's really just sort of to, you know, get your feet wet. I could see it being a lot worse. You know, you don't have to hand in like, you know, 20 Divine Charges or something. You're not going to break the bank with any of these, the tasks or whatever. So I think it's fair. You know, there's some of them that are like, okay, well, really? But, the fact that you get 15 for a tree that you're on and 10 for a tree that you're not, that's a lot better. I was actually expecting almost like half. I was expecting five for the other one. So I'm really happy that you can sort of keep in line with that.
When this came out, I thought I was going to be no-lifing the skill for 3 days in order to get what I wanted before it began. But luckily enough, it was generous enough to me to allow me to get what I needed. Well,
yeah.
But more on that in just a bit. So the next question is, it says, please note, discovering all tech tree blueprints will be a requirement for the standard completionist cape from Monday, May 30th.
Indeed. That, and, you know, like I said before, you know, if you really want to get people to do it, you got to make it a requirement, especially for me. But like I've said, that's sort of my gameplay. I'm kind of an achievement addict when it comes to Xbox, you know, all different types of games. I like getting those accomplishments because it, you know, it's something to show, you know, for your time. So yeah, definitely that kind of sparked me. You know, unfortunately I haven't had an immense amount, a normal amount of time to play around with this as I usually would have on a week, just because of the season and my work and everything's kind of crazy. So I'm playing catch up at work. But yeah, as soon as I saw that, I logged right in and started getting my tasks done because I need my comp cape. So yeah, it's nice, and I think it should be a requirement because it is a really, you know, big part of the game. Same as, you know, you have 120 Dungeoneering, but also for the trim requirement, you know, you have to do all the hard floors, all 60 floors. So, you know, you still got to sort of progress in that skill. So yeah, I'm definitely I'm not upset about that. I think it's a little bit more warranted than the little plushy hunt, if that's what we're looking for. So
yeah, well, I mean, there's a difference between lore and just having you do things for the heck of it. But
yeah,
we should get matching stitches.
Indeed.
So the Dwarven tech tree brings a number of interesting new things here, including the calorie bomb, which is basically an area of effect life point heal that you can throw down, which pretty interesting for bossing. You know, looking back, I'm kind of surprised that we didn't see something like this come into the elven spells last year.
Yeah,
because if you think about it, that's
very group oriented and support heal spells,
support
type of stuff,
oriented. So. But I mean, from invention, I guess this is all right. So. There's that, and you basically make the empty calorie bomb, and then you fill it with fish. So it's just really a simple matter of making these devices, and then, of course, they get used after you throw them down. So you need, for this one, one empty pot, 75 cover parts, 25 organic parts, and 3 direct components.
Now, just to clarify, this is just filled, like, from the bank. It's not an urn-type thing where you fish it into it. You just use the fish on it after you make the shell, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes. Gotcha.
Because it has to be cooked, of course, right?
Okay. Yep. You're right.
So there's that. I wonder if people are actually going to use these at bossing encounters, because, I mean,
I don't know, we can see.
Just looking at the Rocktail one, so you basically fill it, and it fills with 5 Rocktail, and then it can heal up to 4 players within 2 squares for the base Rocktail healing of 2300, and the user for 20% more, which is 2760. Hmm. So, I mean...
Yeah, I think, and from the very small experience I have from bossing, so take this with, you know, a grain of salt, but there's a few phases in Virago where everybody stacks. So I think it actually might be, you know, it... Again, I don't know what the optimal setup for inventory and stuff is, especially for the people camping pets, but I mean, it could be a nice little emergency thing. But, you know, with this, even though it's not necessarily blow you out of the water, I really do like, in you know, like you had mentioned with the Saren spells being support, I like how they're sort of adding more options for roles in bossing. Even though I'm not really into bossing, I like the more, you know, strategic stuff you have to do. So, you know, maybe, you know, you have a healer and then we have our tanks and we have our DPS, but, you know, RS has never really seen sort of a healer role or a support role necessarily. No. So I really like the way that's going, and I think this is a step in the right direction. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's something
I'd like to
I was greatly
more,
hoping
like,
for with the Saren spells and whatnot. So
because, you know,
we've
one
seen
of the,
a bit, but they can take it further.
Yeah, and I mean, in raids, the only real heal I know of is, you know, using a few defensive abilities and then using a couple of the lunar spells to sort of, like, circumvent the you're not really circumventing the mechanics, but you're sort of using them in an odd way rather than just having, like, an actual heal spell that's on, like, a cooldown or something. But, yeah, I like the way that's going, though, so.
Next up is the Kinetic Cyclone, which is a melee version of the Dwarf Multicannon. So, of course, you must have unlocked the Dwarf Multicannon before you can work on creating one of these. So that is one prerequisite that you need to have in mind, is that the Dwarf Multicannon quest must be complete in order to create a Kinetic Cannon, which requires 2 rune bars, 150 plated components, 15 heavy components, and 15 sharp components. Also requires level 70 invention to unlock and 55 dwarven currency, so it's relatively later on. So basically with this one, you need to pull the critters in to nearby, and then once they get within 2 squares, this kinetic slight cone will start hitting them for melee damage and will give you XP. So
I like it.
Yeah. Nice little tool there. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
I think the whole different combat style of cannons is a little bit overdue. So, but I mean,
yeah,
that's just me.
Yeah,
but yeah, I really
yeah,
like that.
Definitely.
So.
Next up is the Auto Sanctifier, and as you might guess from the name, this is effectively a portable gilded altar, except it disappears after 10 charges. So basically, it'll give you the same XP as if you were using POH Gilded Altar. Requires, once again, level 70 invention and 55 dwarven currency. This one requires 10 Marintil, 80 spiritual parts, 40 cover parts, and 8 pious components to create. So, of course, it disappears. It's a consumable, so you're going to need a lot of these if you want to train prayer this way. So I'm not seeing much use for this one.
Mm-mm. I think I understand that they didn't want to completely kill gilded altars, but I think even like 15 to 20 uses would still be acceptable for the amount of parts. And, you know, I'd have to look into it a little bit more to see, but I mean, like the pious components and stuff. I mean, you got to break down some, I mean, you're breaking down bones. I'm pretty sure that's what pious is from.
Yep, that's right.
Breaking down bones instead of burying them. So it seems a little redundant in the fact of, I mean, unless you just want to, you know, sort of go the Iron Man route, I really don't see too much viability with this. Maybe if you would, like I said, increase it to maybe 20, but the amount of bones you'd have to break instead of actually using them. And, you know, you can't just use regular bones because you're gonna you know, disassemble 1K bones and you're probably going to get maybe 20 pious components, just regular bones I'm talking about. So, I mean, you'd have to get like a dragon bone.
Yeah, it is a lot. And, I mean, I needed a few of them, and I resorted to rune dragon bones just because I needed a few pious components or something. Not this, but earlier in invention, and it took more than 10 rune dragon bones. So definitely a very expensive endeavor. Next up is the Dungeoneering Lock Melter, which is, once again, dwarven at the top end of the Dwarven tech tree, 55 Dwarven currency and 70 invention required. It can be used once per dungeon, and it allows you to unlock any non-key dungeoneering door that you don't have the requirement to.
I think that's nice. There's been quite a few dungeons to where, we're obviously, still got about 10% of the dungeon left, and it's a skill door that, we don't have potions for, whatever, so that's nice. I can understand why it's, they can't make it a key door, because that would probably really screw with the algorithm of the key generation and door generation. But it's kind of cool. I like where they're kind of going with that and keeping dungeoneering in the mix.
One lockpick, 50 smooth parts, 30 tensile, and 5 ethereal components. So not too steep, I don't think, compared to some of the other options out there. Ethereal components come from magic offhanded weapons, signs, portents, divine locations, ashes. So you can take that for what it's worth. And also in the Dwarven tech tree, we have something that was initially...
Is the reason that you chose...
is the reason I chose the Dwarven tech tree, and that is the sprinkler for the farming skill. So, this is a really early on one. 25 Dwarven currency, 50 invention to unlock. And it's basically a device that you can plant in the flower spot of any allotment, and it will keep the adjacent patches watered. And, of course, they're allotment patches only, since you can't water herb patches. So there was a thing brought up earlier on RuneWire about this. And the thing is, why don't you just plant a lily, a white lily? Because the white lily does the same thing in terms of preventing adjacent allotments from getting diseased. So, yes, this is duplicate functionality once again on the white lily, because whenever you water a farming patch for that cycle, it ensures that it does not get diseased. So you can either use this or the white lily. I guess it depends on which way you want to go about doing things. So some people say, oh, it's useless. Well, it is something new related to the farming skill, and it just provides a different way without going through the white lilies, because if you remember, the white lily isn't exactly something that, you can just go to the store and purchase. The white lily comes from the white lily seed, which is a result of the giant mole. Mm-hmm. So if you don't fight the giant mole, you're not getting white lily seed. So, we already had the white lily. The sprinkler does provide another option for that. And it looks nice graphically. So, just coming from the landscape farming perspective, then that's why I like it.
Yeah. I'd actually saw your tweet, and it looks really cool. I like that.
Yeah. This goes back to exactly what you said about invention enhancing other skills, because if you think about some things that we can do with farming, sprinklers were always on the agenda, but they obviously require some kind of technology aside from them. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see the sprinkler come into game this way. I had another idea for the sprinkler that related to the farming guild, so we'll have to see what happens with that. But I am happy about this, even though you could already do this in-game with the white lily. Now, there are other things, of course, in the Goblin tech tree that initially came out when Invention was released, and they have been inserted into the tech tree for various amounts of currency, and that is, of course, the Mining Accumulator and the Book Switcher, which came out with Invention's first release. So I know there are some people saying and complaining that, we have to unlock things that we already had, the Mining Accumulator and the Book Switcher, for example, if we went Dwarven. What do you think of that?
I don't want to say I'm upset. I guess I'm a little disappointed. This kind of seems like they couldn't come up with anything else, so they just kind of put it back in. I think it's kind of silly to, you unlock something. Well, just kidding. You have to do it again because we're relocking it for you. I don't know. I think it's kind of silly, but it is what it is. It's really not going to take too many people that long to get. It's not like it's a huge requirement. It's probably going to take you 2 days if you're doing your two tasks every day, or four tasks rather.
Yeah, and looking at these, the Mining Accumulator's level 50 invention. They could have put The books, which are at 50 as well, for when these tech tree items start. So that could have been.
Did they increase? Did they buff them at all, or did they just reinsert them?
They just reinserted them. I'm unaware of any buffs that they have received.
Okay. I mean, it would have been a little different if they changed it around a little bit. But if they just kind of copied and pasted back into the tree, that's kind of it's a little lazy on my part. But
yeah. All right, on to Goblin. You enjoying your Goblin tech tree?
So far, yes. I think it's kind of interesting. You know, I had known that you took the Dwarven route, so I figured I would take the Goblin route just for sake of review purposes. But yeah, I think that's despite having two rehashes, I think it's really cool. So, but again, you know, since I'll be able to advance both trees pretty much in line. I think my biggest, the device is going to be the electrified trap. That's kind of what sold me.
The electrified trap is basically a high catch rate for training the hunter skill. How is this going to enhance your hunter for you?
You know, hunter for me has always been very click intensive with the boxes. Yeah. You know, and as much as I would hate to admit it, you know, I've received my fair share of Protean traps on Treasure Hunter, and you know, I have to say it's extremely nice, especially the whole auto catch thing. That's really cool. But you know, one thing that's always sort of irked me, you know, hunter is definitely not my favorite skill, but you know, as you're clicking around with your pattern of box traps on the ground, you know, there's always going to be they come in, they trip the trap, and you know, nothing, and then you have to reset it up and stuff like that. So not only is it sort of an AFK trap, it's also a high catch rate trap. So in my opinion, that's two birds with one stone, hunting pun intended right there. But yeah, I really think that's cool, and it's really just personal preference for me. I've never really been a huge fan of Hunter. This sort of makes it a little bit easier, which is, in my opinion, what invention is about, enhancing skills, making them a little bit more easier, making them fun. So yeah, that definitely sold for me. So again, personal preference, but it's definitely something I'm looking forward to trying out. So,
all right. It is consumable and it has 15 charges max, so you will need a lot of them, and they are stackable. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Requirements on these are one box trap, 30 connector parts, 15 stab parts, and two stunning components. The examine info is an electrified box trap for dignified and reliable hunting. Dignified hunting.
Dignified. I like that adjective there.
Yeah. We also got the bank standard, BANK. I guess we can't call it the bank standard, but it's the BANK standard. And what this one does is... after standing around for, I think it's around 3 minutes or so, it explodes and it gives you a selection of invention components. So 35 goblin currency and level 60 invention is required for this. And you need one adamant bar and 10 refined components only. So it's not going to be something that's too hard to create. Though I do wonder what kind of components that it gives. I mean, they did mention 5 sets of 25 random components, 4 sets of 1 uncommon, and anything else after that is rare because it's a small chance of producing a rare material. Mm-hmm. So common and uncommon components, I don't know if this is something to... look into, because I don't see how you're going to make money from this, or rather save money, because if you look at what refined components come from, the refined components purely only come from disassembling gizmos and gizmo shells. So
now, are you sure about that? Because what does a junk refiner do? Doesn't that refine your junk and make it a refined component? Because if so, that could be a very nice sort of circle, or cycle rather, of all the junk that you get, because if you can refine your junk into refined components and then use the refined components in an Addy bar create components you can use, that's sort of a nice little recycle thing. And I mean, that's another thing that kind of sold me on this tree, because let me actually check right now. How much junk do I have? I have 107K junk. So if I could just make a junk refiner, which previous to this, junk refiners were absolutely useless. Like, no one used them. Like, the top, you know, Scuzzy, Lamy, nobody used junk refiners. You're right. So you can, you know, I like the fact that they sort of made that dead content usable, and it's basically a recycle thing. So I'm definitely
you're right.
Going
this definitely to, completes the arc of the recycle. So okay, I'll give you that. So I mean, yeah. I mean, okay. I guess we could go with that. They also give 1,100 invention XP when you're creating. So if you, I guess, if you have lots of junk, this might be something worth looking into.
Definitely.
Very interesting. You'll have to give that a test and report back. Now, I kind of want to research this in the Goblin Tree. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Though I don't, unfortunately, have 60 invention yet. So we'll have to wait and see for that. Also in the Goblin Tree, there's the Monkey Mind Control Helmet, so you can be like Michael Jackson now.
Oh, God.
Because he had a pet monkey, right?
I think so, yeah.
Except rather than being a pet monkey that'll follow you around, we already have this, you turn that pet monkey into a butler for your POH.
Yes.
So you basically put this on the monkey in the invention guild, and then that serves as the butler in the POH.
Yep, and noted that this is basically, to put it very simply, this is a demon butler who doesn't have to be paid. I mean, respectively, obviously, you're going to have to make the helmet, which is, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, he's not going to ask for 5 or 6K or whatever every, you know, 3 trips he makes to the bank. So basically, it's a free demon butler. Yeah. So if you are not on board with that, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, you need, for the materials, you need 1 monkey talisman, 420 head, 25 crystal parts, and 50 living components.
And this is indefinite, right? It doesn't deplete or anything?
I'm not sure on that. You'll have to give that a go and see. Once again, level 60 invention. I mean, right. It doesn't say as though it's going to disappear, so I would assume that. But,
okay.
I mean, if you were to do that, I think... I mean, this would effectively make all the other butlers obsolete if there was no way of needing to recharge it or pay for it, because every other butler does need to be repaid quite often.
Yes.
So I don't know if they'd want to do that to construction.
Well, they sure as hell haven't done much other than that. So, I mean, you know, if they're going to be worried about construction, let's get a rework in the mix. But yeah,
oh,
I mean, that's another time.
The examine info on this. A system for subjugating... subservient simians.
Oh, gosh.
As if there wasn't enough with the POH, or not the POH, the monkey pets. Now we got the monkey butler that can be controlled. And previously you could disassemble monkeys.
Oh, God.
Someone at JX obviously has a fascination with monkeys.
One might think so, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yay. All right. Also, the Dungeoneering Party Simulator. You can simulate having more people in your Dungeoneering Party. So you use this. It will make it as though your party is one larger than it actually is, therefore increasing the amount of XP that you get from your dungeon. So I think lots of solo dungeoneers and maybe people who are doing 4-person dungeons might find this useful. I know the solo dungeoneers will, because taking it up from a 1-person to a 2-person XP should be pretty good. Let's see. We also got, okay, you mentioned the electrified trap, and finally the Aldak coil, which is the magic version of the dwarf multi-cannon, much like we had the melee version in the Dwarven tech tree. So there's the devices and the device reworks that were released this week. And 5 devices for each tree is a good place to start, I think. And looking at the tree and what they did with it, they could certainly add more at each tier if they choose to in the future, or they could expand to higher levels as well. So I think this really completes invention as the catch-all skill, where if they want to, you know, put something in a certain skill, but, oh, we don't want to exactly add this as something that everyone can use right away in, say, maybe smithing or crafting next, then we'll just throw it in invention, and invention is the catch-all, where if we think of a useful device, we can put it in there.
Right. Yep.
And I mean, you can always argue that, oh, there's been so many other little things, like we could put such and such an item inside the tech trees rather than, you know, putting it on a treasure hunter, or maybe rather than, you know, putting it in invention, it should have been a quest reward or some kind of reward for that. But I think the point that we need to really remember here is what you said earlier, is that this completes the purpose of what invention was initially designed for, and that is just a skill that lets you enhance other skills and make them a little bit easier, a little bit less intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, I think this update accomplishes what it set out to.
Indeed, yeah. Like I said, I really like this update. It's small and subtle. You know, it's nothing extremely groundbreaking, probably to the average player, but it's really exciting. I love, like, skill content updates. So, yeah, it's really in sort of a, I don't want to say a rut, but I'll say it anyway, sort of a rut of update patterns we've seen with, like, these kind of dinky-ass little promos and events and stuff like this. It's really nice to see, you know, some core content to a skill that definitely needed it, you know, strengthen stuff. And, you know, even with the whole recycling, the junk components, it really sort of tied it up together. And I really like this update. So,
yeah. And I mean, some of the initial feedback that I saw said, oh, these are all useless. But I think we found uses for everything here except for maybe the sprinkler, unless you already had lilies, because you got the calorie bomb, which doesn't exist in game already as it is. Granted, yeah, you can do some healing with the Saren spells, but anyone who has played healer before will know that you need more than one heal, so calorie bomb is good. Kinetic cyclone, people have been wanting that for years. Auto sanctifier, okay, maybe we just want to get a little bit of prayer XP and we don't want to go to the gilded altar. We can do that, so I'll put that one at about a 3 out of 5 for usefulness. Dungeoneering lock melter, you never know if you're going to have a skill, so I think any competent dungeoneering party that does not have, you know, at least some maxed member inside their party is definitely going to bring a lock melter, because we need to remember that not everyone in this game is maxed out.
Yeah.
And then Sprinkler Mark 1 accomplishes keeping allotments from getting diseased, which the White Lily does, but like I said, do you know anyone who fights the giant mole?
No. I mean, I do it for Reaper, but no. You don't just go bossing and kill the mole. Like, it's really nobody does it, so right. Yeah.
And then on the goblin side, the BANK stander, you discovered the nice little cycle of recycling items into components, so that's good. Monkey mind control helmet, so everyone can be like Michael Jackson. The Dungeoneering Party Simulator, help out solo Dungeoneers, and maybe if you're missing someone from the party. The Electrified Trap, I'm not sure how that's going to work out, mainly because it's consumable, and like you said, they could increase the charges on that and the Auto Sanctifier, but I'm sure the metrics will back that up at some point in the future. And then the Aldak Coil, the magic version of the Dwarf Multicannon. So, all in all, I think the vast majority of these are useful, and the only ones that probably will need tweaks are the trap and the sanctifier if they're not getting enough use.
Indeed.
So overall, pretty good update, I think. So let's move on to the patch notes then, shall we?
We shall.
Okie dokie. So this week, starting off with some graphical changes. First off, players can no longer see the aquarium in the distance in a player owned house in NXT.
This is funny because this is actually, you know, we read through all these, and I know I probably say this every week, but, you know, I never see half the stuff. And actually, last week, I saw this, and I was like, oh my gosh, this better be in the patch notes next week.
Yeah.
Because it was, like, way off in the distance. And, you know, what it was is, you know, I have my aquarium, like, right next to my portal. So I think it's only in building mode. I'm not sure. But anyway.
No, it's, you know, in every mode if you
every
have
mode.
That.
Okay.
I was chatting with Brad, and this was the first thing he noticed upon trying NXT. He's like, why is there an aquarium inside that I can see off the far end of my POH? Well, that's where the Jagex put it. So, anyways. Rare items received as drop in loot share and group share now send a player broadcast, which is good, because, I mean, if you're using loot share, you definitely do want to know when someone is getting a drop.
Yep.
It seems like so long ago. Remember when they reworked CoinShare to not give coins, but give those little tokens that you can sell on the GE?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The duration of Barricade now scales according to the equipped shield, which is excellent because
that is very good.
I mean, it gives you a reason to take something higher than, you know, just a standard basic shield if you're just wanting to use the Barricade ability, because I know Barricade is used quite a lot in some of the bossing encounters there. Mm-hmm. So definitely another reason to see shield gameplay. I wonder, yeah, this would work with defenders then, wouldn't it?
I would think so, yeah.
Hmm. Very interesting. Well, I know we had that question a few weeks ago about what would be required to make use defenders. Well, there's a interesting thing right there. Might have to go work up and go to the Kalphite King and Nex. Farqui, the cleaner, has finally got around to tidying up the remnants of, you ready for this? The gnome copter tours. Local farmers have taken advantage of this by moving more of their cows in. Gnome copters were north of Lumbridge, just southwest of the Champions Guild, and mm-hmm. I don't know when the gnome copters disappeared. It has to be at least 3 years ago. So,
yeah, I remember it well.
Gnome copter launching point was still there, though I think maybe the gnome copters still allowed you to use them as a cutscene rather than actually controlling the gnome copter as a way of seeing into the members' areas. So, not 100% sure on that, but gnome copters have been gone for a long time. Congratulations go out to Varrock's own Max and Priftina's Ellen Antworth, who have reached a high enough level in invention to wear their Max capes again.
Very good, very good. I'm so proud of them.
Yeah. I mean,
now I'm curious. What's the threshold for them to get it back? Is there a certain amount of high scores, 99s?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Because I thought it was originally it was supposed to be that once the first person got 99, then Max got it back. Because I think that's how it was within our divination, rather. But I don't know. Don't quote me.
Well,
on
I
that.
Mean, if they forgot that, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. But it's relatively.
They probably didn't want to have Max get 99 in the first like 22 hours because they were embarrassed. Oh my gosh, what a train wreck. But I'm, you know, again, with this update, I'm really glad that they've not only cleaned up the gnome copters, but they're cleaning up the actual skill, and it's definitely on the right track. So anyway, moving forward.
Yeah, a total reward value has been added to the Miscellanea Kingdom interface, so you don't necessarily need to go to your bank and total up what you have received for Miscellanea for the current term, which is good. And anytime you make profit, it's always a positive thing there. I actually went there, and I noticed this before I did my reading into the patch notes, and it's like, oh, you made 2.6 million GP off this.
That's so nice.
Only 500K, but I didn't have my settings as optimal because I just wanted some coal for something I'll talk about later. and the following changes, a right-click option has been added to the coal bag while using the bank to directly empty its contents, which is good. Because normally you'd think the coal bag is something that you use when you're smithing bars, but it makes sense that you can carry the coal bag with you and store coal if you're mining coal. Because, I mean, who mines coal anymore these days, right?
Right.
And a bunch of changes made to holy water. Players can now create enchanted vials faster by using empty vials on the Book of Binding. Previously, you had to use the book on each individual vial, so that's good. Enchanting vials no longer drains magic or prayer points. The magic XP for enchanting has been lowered from 5 to 1 to compensate for the above changes. Hollow reeds are no longer destroyed when used to siphon from the pure water pool. Adding pure water to enchanted vials to create holy water now uses the Make X system. Hooray! Holy water now carries the stats and equip requirements of a level 50 dart, but with a reduced damage and accuracy modifier versus demons. Obviously, because otherwise it would be too powerful against demons. Mm-hmm. And we already have the dark light and the enhanced dark lights, so there's really no place for holy water. Support has been added for more parts of the overworld to be disguised better in NXT by substituting in parts of the map where nothing is really there to make it look like they are not floating in the middle of nowhere, e.g. the player-owned house aquarium. So that is basically the way they went around fixing this, and I think that we'll ultimately discover that this is the best way to fix things related to NXT, because as we saw last week, there was the Void Knight outpost, and for some odd reason, I'm not sure if you're supposed to be able to see this, but if you are south of Taverly and west of Falador, you are able to see Entrena, and I'm not sure if that is designed or not, so... water distortion, formerly seen at the edge of foreground objects at certain camera angles, has been fixed. You ever noticed this?
Actually, I did. That was one of the first things I noticed. I was, I think, in the incandescent wisp colony, and at certain camera angles, it would like really glow and get kind of weird. I found it interesting, but yeah, I'm glad they fixed that. So I was kind of unsure on what even was causing that, just from like a programming standpoint, how that could actually be doing that, but it's nice.
Oh, things get very complicated when you're dealing with shadows and whatnot. But yeah, water distortion, I definitely noticed that, because I think water is one of the most noticed new features of the NXT game client.
Yeah.
And party hats now change color when performing the party hat fire making animation.
Did they? I thought there were different colors already.
No. The party hat fire making animation is the one where when you throw a new log onto the fire, it throws a party hat.
Yeah.
And previously they would rotate each time. But this is an NXT issue. It wasn't working in NXT.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
All right. Well, there's the tweaks and fixes for this week, everyone. Let's talk a bit about Rune Lab, shall we?
We shall.
Okay. So before I get to the good news this week, I would like to just... mention some changes that are being made to Rune Labs at the end of the month. So as of May 28th, when they stop taking ideas in for 2017, some major changes are being made to Rune Labs. And these include that no new criteria will be added, supporting ideas will no longer be possible, and links to Rune Labs will be removed from the RuneScape website. Well, technically it still would be possible to add ideas to Rune Labs, for all intents and purposes, it will be closed until further notice.
Now, is this... Okay, this is kind of... Because I've read this before, but I guess I didn't realize that they're kind of, like, doing away with it rather than just, like, temporarily shutting it down. Because I know, like, when they released it, it was kind of like, okay, here's a window, we're going to do this, and, you know, they did the power to the player polls and stuff like that. But from what it sounds like now is, like, they're kind of just doing away with Rune Labs after they get their stuff.
Rune Labs is only going to be used for when they open up the yearly survey, as they're doing it right now. And they want to look into the player power process and looking at an alternative way of doing this, because as it stands right now, their official reasoning is that, quote, unfortunately, the percentage of players participating has not been great enough to justify a regular commitment to Rune Labs updates. Essentially, it only represents a small proportion of the player base. We appreciate that the limitations of the system itself had an impact, but ultimately Rune Labs did not achieve what we hoped it would, and we need to put it on hold indefinitely so we can review its purpose and method of execution. And short term, they're only intending to open Rune Labs whenever they need it for big player power pushes such as the annual survey, and this will give your very best suggestions time and space to breathe and garner the support that they deserve. And in the longer term, we'll be reviewing the player power process and investigating the possibility of an alternative. So that's it for Rune Labs.
I think it served its purpose well for the small amount of time it was in. We got some pretty good updates out of it. So, I mean, it's nice. I'm glad it, you know, wasn't a complete, like, dead content. But I also think that it's nice that they're killing it before it dies, really.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that we have effectively learned our lesson with, you know, pulled content. Pulled content went away after the first year that they did that. They pulled half the updates of 2014. That went away. And 2015, half the updates were Rune Labs, and now Rune Labs is going away in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I ultimately think that looking back on it, Player Power and Rune Labs was a knee-jerk reaction to the silent, or rather the vocal minority of people who had an issue with, you know, RuneScape 3's launch, the HTML5 beta, the evolution of combat way back when in 2012, and they brought out these mechanisms of allowing the players to have their own say very easily, mind you, easier than I think any other game company out there. And we're seeing the results here that it's not exactly working out how they had hoped, and I think that this is vindication of the whole process, that if Jagex had just stuck to their guns and, you know, made updates that they felt were in the general sense of the game's best health, then we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. But at the end of the day, I think that we were right about Rune Labs all along, that it wasn't needed, and it just went to serve a vocal minority of the game community.
Yeah. I agree.
And then they say, quote, great projects. We have seen great projects coming from Rune Labs, including Rune and Adamant Dragons, The Light Within, and Beneath Cursed Tides. They are in-game today as a direct result of your passion and creativity. Notice they didn't put Waterfall Fishing on there, eh?
Funny how that works.
So, I mean, I'm happy about this, I want to say. And I'm not, you know, necessarily saying that the Rune Dragons, the Light Within, and Beneath Cursed Tides were bad. I think Beneath Cursed Tides was an excellent quest. The Light Within was not the best ever, but it was still good. And Rune and Adamant Dragons really aren't my thing because combat. But nonetheless, putting control of updates back in the hands of Jagex is a good thing.
So, absolutely.
Anyways. But with that being said, I need to just take a moment and say thank you to everyone for engaging with our Rune Labs idea, Prestige Mode. Because believe it or not, Prestige Mode will be coming to the 2017 content survey and will be revealed at the Jagex Summer Summit on May 28th. So, thank you to everyone who supported Prestige Mode, whether it be in the topic, in discussions with me and the others, or just, you know, giving an upvote on Rune Labs. We got to 61 supporters, which is page 2. But nonetheless, earlier today, we were given a response by Maud Osborne on the actual updates that says, congratulations, this has been added to the RuneScape 2017 survey. It will be listed as Prestige Mode, and we will be including a couple of questions on how a Prestige Mode should best be implemented. Watch the Summer Summit on the 28th to find out what we have planned for your idea, and good luck in the voting.
That's awesome. And, we achieved what we were going for, ultimately.
Well,
that's,
you know,
the next
I wasn't
step.
Actually going for this. I was actually just going for 30 supports, then 50, and then the front page, which we didn't complete the front page, but nonetheless, 61 supporters and enough to get the attention of Jagex tells me that we started a discussion that needed to be discussed. And I have said this to practically everyone who supported or, you know, found some absurd reason not to press the support button on this Rune Labs update by, you know, just engaging in discussion. We are definitely doing a service to the RuneScape community, looking out for the health of the game going forward. And for that, I just want to say thank you once again to everyone who gave it an upvote, supported the idea, or posted constructive suggestions to it. We made it to the front page. The next part starts on May 28th, in which we hear what Jagex has planned for the idea. And then we will, you know, encourage every one of you out there who supported this on Rune Labs to once again support it on the 2017 survey. Tell your friends and tell everyone you know in RuneScape to vote for Prestige Mode on the 2017 content survey. So, thank you once again, everyone. I'm really happy that we were able to do this.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Especially to get a reply from a JMod, that's quite the accomplishment.
Yeah, so. I mean, pretty much all the updates on the first page got a reply, and not all of them made it onto the survey. And then most of the updates. Not all of them got replies. Fewer than the first page on the second page got replies. But even then, second page updates getting approved to go on the survey was harder than on the first page. So just the fact that we got a reply and got it on the survey on the second page really speaks a lot to the discussions that we've had, and the fact that maybe, just maybe, Jagex wants to do something with this in 2017. So, thank you. All right. So, there's one chapter of RSVP update closed. We'll go to sleep for a week on promoting Prestige Mode and then come back on the 28th at the Summer Summit to talk all about this and what you can do on that survey for Prestige Mode. And I guess now is a good time to mention it. We will be here in some capacity on the 28th or shortly thereafter discussing what was revealed. And that means that we will actually be doing a special episode that week, because next week's is a quest week, and you know how long the episodes run on quest week, so it makes sense to do a second episode that week, I think. So stay tuned for information on that, about when we will talk about what went on at the RuneScape Summer Summit. All right. And also this week, it's worth noting that if you feel the need for a Solomon store outfit this week, they brought out the Griffin outfit. I don't know. It's not something I would get, but
yeah,
it's there.
It's something to fill the Solomon slot for the week. So,
anyways, moving on to that, we have Treasure Hunter. Nothing too overpowered this week, aside from bonus chests. You'll get an extra 3 or 4 bonus chests depending on how far you fill your bar up. And that means you get 3 times the reward or 4 times the reward. So imagine landing on 200 mil.
That would be pretty insane. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I mean, maybe.
One can dream, right?
Maybe, right? 200 mil is in the cards for this weekend. Though pretty hard to get, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and the final piece of RuneScape news this week is a developer blog talking about the Ark. And, of course, this was voted on for one of the major pieces of content that will be coming later this year. So, this is coming in July, believe it or not.
Is it?
Yeah. You know, initially we thought that this would be released in September or October, but as it stands out, they're doing another phased release here, as they're doing with Invention. Part of the Ark will come out in July, the other part will come out about 3 months later, so that puts it at about October.
Okay.
I hope that people will read into this and realize that, you know, when the Ark comes out, that only half of it is out. I do hope that that is realized going forward.
Yeah. Well, if they don't know, then they know now, so that's good.
The Ark will, of course, feature Slayer, new Slayer creatures, because that was voted on in one of the polls. They say they probably won't have a new Slayer Master in the traditional sense, but there will be some ways to get Slayer XP based on specific targets. It's still early. They haven't modeled any of the characters yet, but here are some initial designs of what the Ark creatures could look like. I guess they basically look like a form of a dragon and a sea creature. I'm guessing that's just what,
which makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The dragons for RuneScape and of course sea creatures for being related to player owned ports. And then speaking of ports, they say, the Ark will be linked to player owned ports somehow. They're designing this update for the high level players, but that's not to say that if you're lower level, you would be blocked from visiting. Bear in mind that just like ports, if you want to see everything you can see on the Ark, you'll need to be 90 plus and a handful of skills. More news will be available on this as they start actually building the content. And then they say this will be a fresh start with respect to the economy, so that everyone will be on a level playing field, and you won't be able to spend your GP to unlock everything from day one. They're going to be introducing a brand new currency, and while you won't be able to trade any of your existing gold or resources, they will probably let you take Eastern Lands home and reinvest them in the port. So there's some stuff right there. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that will be coming out in October. And the Halloween update will take place in the Ark. And also there will be a quest somewhere for story and lore. So it's basically going to be that new RuneScape continent that everyone has wanted, except it's going to be in the east rather than the south or the west. Which I guess makes sense, seeing as we've had all this development for ports going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's, you know, since this year we had a an off year for, because we usually have a ports update usually at the beginning of the year. Since we sort of had a port update break, it was what I was looking for. It's nice to see that, you know, that sort of hasn't been put on the back burner and we're actually getting a lot more than we bargained for. So you know what, I'll take a year and a half or so off to get more than what we've gotten in the past two updates. So I'm really looking forward to this content wise. So
yep. And they did say that due to the nature of how the Ark is working, it will not be as story-driven as the Lord of Vampirium and the River of Blood, so they're going to be able to be much more open about what's actually coming with the update. So that's interesting. I think it'll be a refreshing breath of fresh air there. So,
indeed.
Anyways, let us move on to questions. You want to read this first one from Undoer?
Let's do it. Alrighty. From Undoer. Hi, guys. I've got some question discussion topics for you this week. But first, I just want to correct something you've been discussing. There was that YouTube video about using Treasure Hunter to max an account in the shortest time possible. The video you discussed was just one in the series. He spent $4,400, which is 20,000 keys, in that weekend promotion. In total, he actually used 50,000 keys and spent a whopping $11,000 to basically max his account in 2 days played time. I'm just going to stop right there. That is ridiculous. Okay. I'm going to regain my composure here. Okay, so my question discussion topic is following the same account worth trend. I have been playing RuneScape on and off for over 10 years, like most of us these days. After logging into my adventures log the other day, I found out that I have 170 days played, which is rounded up. That's an insane 4,080 hours. So that got me thinking, how much would that convert to if I was being paid for all that time instead? After researching the median hourly rates for Australia, which is $30.36, America, which is $19.75, and Canada, which is $26.47, I multiplied the hourly rates by my hours played. The results were disturbing, to say the least. My account is worth $123,000, or no, $123,868.80 Australian, just short of 80.7K in American, and just short of 108K Canadian time wise. Do you find this as disturbing as I do? How much are your accounts worth time wise? Also, a tech question. I'm looking into getting a new mobile phone on contract. Any suggestions? What do you guys have? Thanks for the great podcast, Undoer. I'm just going to have to take a breath here because that was one hell of a question. And, man, I'll tell you
what. Kind of a disturbing question, too.
Yeah, and, you know, it's that first part really sort of took it out of me because, you know, I think everyone knows our stance, you know, on that whole thing, as we have discussed, obviously, in previous episodes, and how disturbing, you know, $4,400 worth of keys, but to know that he spent more than double that is absolutely ridiculous. But thank you for clarifying that, because that just goes to show, you know, what we're sort of afraid of with this whole Treasure Hunter thing. So yeah, that's crazy. And you know, again,
yeah,
I don't like
my biggest fear is that someone will hear this who is contemplating coming back to the game and will say, I don't want to come back if someone could spend this much money and just get a maxed account.
Right.
And that's why I say your achievements have to be your achievements, and that's what you need to play for. You need to play the game how you want, and it can't be dependent on anyone else.
Absolutely. So,
all right, you ready to crunch some numbers?
I actually am. Let's see. I'm actually going to pull my calculator all right.
I'll start because I got my time here. I have played for 332 days and 23 hours, which accounts for 79.91 hours total. This gives me 211,521 Canadian. Now for Australian, you said was 3036, which gives me a grand total of 242,606, which, I mean, is a lot. And then 1975 for American, putting in the same thing right there, 157,822. And, I mean, like I said previously, I don't like putting things in terms of real-world value for RS. I don't play the game that way, but there you go. That's how much the account is worth, and I don't find it disturbing for my own purposes because I never invested any of that real-world cash into actually just, you know, basically Treasure Hunter to get there right away.
Right.
Though the only thing I'm going to say that might be disturbing to everyone out there is that by this measure here and the measure that we saw in your earlier part of the question, it's more efficient just to pay outright.
Yeah. to be fair, yes, you are
but
correct.
But of course, we're not advocating that.
No, absolutely not. Nope.
Yeah. All right, what are you worth?
All right, let's see. I'm getting the last one here right now. So, what is Canadian? 26.
It's just absurd to look at these numbers and see things like this. And like that's why I said I don't find the actual numbers disturbing. It's just a matter of the fact that you can put it in these terms.
Right. It's just a simple conversion. Anyway, okay, so I have been playing since 2004, like you on and off, a total of 314 days, which translates to 7,536 hours. And here comes the fun part. American, I am worth $148,836. Australian takes the cake with $228,792.96. And Canadian, I am just short of 200K with $199,477.92. So, I wish that money was in my bank account, but alas, it is in RuneScape. And like Shane said, you really can't make the comparison, but it's just a fun little little conversion.
Because so membership, I'm still on the $5 a month membership. I'm not sure about you. So
yep, it's funny because whenever I go on the forums to discuss things, you know, you always see the little thing under their name, and it's always like, you know, February 2015, and you know, you can see them sometimes as far back as, you know, maybe 2009 or something, and then I post something and February 2005. It's like, oh gosh, you know. So
June 2004 for me.
There you go. So yep, it's definitely have not canceled my membership at all, and I'm still on the $5 membership. So people always ask me, like, "Oh yeah, how much is it?" I was like, five. I was like, "Oh nope, sorry, I pay $5." It's definitely almost doubled now, but yeah, I always have to catch myself. But yep, going strong on my 12th year here in about 5 months. So anyway,
that makes us feel old.
I know, right?
Well, phone-wise, I'm not sure exactly how phone contracts work in Australia compared to the rest of the world, but I do know that here, our phone contracts aren't nearly as bad as they used to be, and that's still the way that the majority of people do get their cellular phones is by way of contract, and because for around $200 every 2 years, if you want, you can get the brand new iPhone. So that's why, of course, people prefer the contract option. I am still a fan of small phones. The 4-inch form factor of the iPhone 5 and the 5S, it just feels like a perfect size to me. Mainly because I don't feel as though, my phone is a full-blown computer as you would use a larger, you know, 6S or 6S Plus as a mini tablet, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I primarily prefer the smaller 5S and 5, which is the 4-inch form factor. But also, it just fits so much more nicely in the hand compared to the 6S Plus, which doesn't really fit all the way around in the hand. And then the 6S barely fits, at least my hand, but it's just a matter of preference the way it fits. So I think it's getting harder and harder to find 4-inch phones out there. But that's just what I've observed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on the 5S, and I think it's really an interesting discussion to have regarding iOS, because, you know, you have iOS. It's been, you know, primarily the same structurally and, you know, from the user interface and the preferences-wise since iOS first came out in 2007. Granted, we've had some structural changes internally, you know, to make it more secure, faster, more efficient, 64-bit and all that other fun stuff. And then, you know, one major user interface overhaul and little things along the way. And that's what I think contributes to making iOS feel old. It feels much the same way that Windows 7 did prior to the launch of Windows 8 and Windows 10, in that, you know, nothing much had changed since the launch of Windows 95, comparing Windows 95, in this case, to the first launch of iOS. So in that regard, I guess that we can say that iOS is a very mature operating system. So I think that, you know, there are some things that could be improved with iOS, but at the other end of the spectrum, it still does things day to day that absolutely amaze me. And you really, you know, don't see these things as core features of iOS, but when it does them, you are grateful that it had did those. So,
right.
Even though I feel it needs some work in closing, I think it is still probably the easiest to use and most supported smartphone operating system out there. So that's me. I'll probably be sticking with iOS going forward unless Microsoft does something really major with the Surface phone in 2017, but it would need to shake me loose of the Apple ecosystem. And notice I didn't mention Android in there at all. Android is never going to happen. So.
Yeah, I have a, you know, I've had an iPhone since 2008. You know, I started with the 3G, went to the 4, went to the 5, and I currently have the 6 Plus right now. I usually get them, you know, speaking of contracts, I usually upgrade whether I need it or not every 2 years just to sort of stay on top of the ball. In regards to going forward, I will probably be waiting for the announcement this fall of what Apple's going to do. And, you know, if it's nothing too substantial, you know, they really are going to have to sort of keep my attention. I'm probably going to have to research and look into to other methods. And I don't want to seal my fate already. But, you know, I really love Apple. You know, being an architect, being a designer, I really have the philosophy, a personal philosophy of, you know, beauty and simplicity. And, you know, iOS is very, you know, very simple, very concise, gets it done. But I don't know. It could just be a change of scenery. I could get something else, you know, Droid or whatever, and not like it and, you know, come right back to Apple. But, you know, you kind of have to try. And like I said, Apple could very well just blow me out of the water here, you know, in the fall. But time will tell. But hopefully they do, because, you know, I have a hard time switching, I guess, from something I've known so long. You know, this is like my 8th or 9th year, you know, having it. So it's going to be quite a culture shock, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if I change, but you know, it's like I said, it's still up for debate. I still got a lot to think about and research. So, you know, nothing's set in stone, but yeah, I've been a loyal Apple customer in regards to mobile for as pretty much as long as I've had a phone. So it's, you know, there's definitely, you're not going to go wrong with that. But I can't really speak in terms of Android, as I haven't had any of those. But I'm very happy with Apple, so that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah. You know, as for me, the two things that I said that, you know, iOS always does things that are amazing, and the two things that I am actually referring to in this case are the iOS keyboard. I am actually very happy with. You know, I've tried all those other ones that are out there, like Swipe and SwiftKey and whatnot, that, you know, try and offer you ways to speed up your typing by, you know, dragging your finger across the screen. And I can see how that might be kind of useful if you have a larger screen. But, I mean, if you have a larger screen, then you just make the keyboard larger and type with two thumbs. There you go. Just like you did right. The BlackBerry day. So the iOS keyboard, in terms of its suggestions, it knows who you're talking to, what application you're in, and then based on that, it will offer you appropriate suggestions so that you can basically type the first word of a sentence and it will know exactly what you want to type. So, like, for example, I can type a three-word sentence by basically just typing the first few letters of the first word, tapping the suggestion above, and then the next two suggestions that it pops up if it's a common thing that I say. So there's that. And the other thing that amazed me just a couple weeks ago was ordering Subway using a list, and it knew that I had done that previously using the Notes application. So when I arrived at the place, on the lock screen, there was a little notification in the bottom left of the screen showing the suggested app for the current context that you're in. So you basically just swipe up from that, and it opens up exactly what you want to have open. So... it can do that as well. And, you know, this is the same kind of intelligent stuff that was put into iOS 9, such that, you know, if you take your phone into the car and connect a Bluetooth speaker, it will know that you're in your car and it will automatically do that for you. So those are the kind of things that iOS can do. And what Apple's major selling point is on this is that we're not sending your data, your location data, or your usage habits to a server, much like Android does, and instead we're doing this all locally on your device. So there's that. And then I guess the third thing I really like about iOS is the App Store. Based on what I've seen from Android applications and whatnot, just the applications on iOS seem so much more well done than they are on Android. And if I was to tell you why I'm not using Android, I would have to say it comes down to the hardware and the fact that the hardware is not designed well, and the Apple hardware just feels so much more solid. And there's very few stock Android experiences out there that use Google's own version of Android. So that's why I wouldn't use Android. And as for Windows Phone, it just comes down to ecosystem. And anyone who has talked to me before knows I recommend Windows Phone second to iOS. So there's that. I just felt I should expand on that, where things currently are. But anyways, anything else on that?
Nope, I think we covered it.
Okie dokie, next one is from Mr. Bistro and goes back to the Arc. So, reading through the new dev blog for the Eastern Lands, what is your opinion on the closed economy idea? Personally, I have mixed feelings about it, but I'm happy for the most part. It's a new take on the ever-growing item-counting game and could easily be changed over to the main economy if it doesn't pan out. Thanks from Mr. Bistro. Yeah, so we mentioned a bit about this previously, and I think that this is needed in the current stage of RuneScape because so many people have so much GP stacked up that they can just purchase whatever they need with GP, and that kind of takes the fun out of it. You know, there are people out there, and they probably don't remember the times when you were playing RuneScape 2 and you had to actually go to someone to buy a rune plate body because you couldn't get them from, you know, the bajillions of drops that you get while doing Slayer. So really happy about this idea. And I think based on what you've said, it also creates a nice little insulation should something go wrong, in that it's insulated from the main game economy. So there's not much bad that can happen from this, and I think it'll be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, I like it, especially with the general demographic of the game. I think we can all agree that the basic, you know, demographic of, you know, the players, you know, high-level community, it is just pretty much just slay boss, da-da-da, make all the money, and then when an update comes out, just dump your bank into it and be done with it instantly. So it's kind of nice to sort of, you know, put the brakes on, you know, manually and be able to sort of control the progression, similar to how they did on a smaller scale with this little invention update. You know, rather than just, oh, you have the level, okay, boom, unlock it, you know, pay your points or whatever. You know, you're limited, you're restricted to earn the points on sort of a daily schedule, same as with, you know, when we did the statues for, you know, in the vampire, all that stuff, all the plinths and stuff. You know, you could do one each day. But yeah, I think it's a nice way to sort of, like I said, put on the brakes. As Shane was saying, give it insulation. If something does go crazy or if there's some kind of, you know, bug, people aren't going to get rich or lose all their money on it. But, you know, it can also be very easily, once it does work out and once they do fine tune it, you know, have a way to implement it into the game, but, you know, very slowly. So it's not just a complete, you know, bonus experience weekend sort of GE game changer, you know. So,
yeah,
anyway.
Exactly. And I think that's also something that people want in the game is the ability to experience a new area, something unknown. And if you look at what we have currently on the map, everything is filled in. So the Eastern Lands is definitely going to create that same kind of exploration kind of view when we first went to the Fremenic Lands, for example, or the ice features up north. So that, in addition to the closed economy, really, I think, symbolizes what the Ark is going to be known for, and that is basically a fresh start for the people who have already played RuneScape to its full extent in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I
think it's good to keep it fresh.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll keep it fresh and turn out quite well. So thank you, Mr. Bistro.
Yep.
The next one is from MageBit from RuneScape Weekly. If you had full creative powers, how would you implement Prestige Mode? Well, as we already mentioned, Prestige Mode is going to be on the 2017 survey, so I'm interested to see what ideas JX has in mind for Prestige Mode, seeing as they have some base ideas for that going forward. But I think that if I was implementing Prestige Mode and I could just have it in the game the way I think it should be in the game, I would try to keep it as simple as possible in that, one, you would reset your skills to the very, or reset a chosen skill to the very beginning as we outlined in the Prestige Mode document. Two, you would be able to revert this prestige back to your original XP only once for some kind of price of X bonds. I think that would be a great thing to do in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is that I would maintain those legacy high score tables, because the legacy high scores table still keep track of who gets to 200 mil first and when they get to 200 mil, which I think is important to some people. And I think if we've seen anything over the past number of years, is that Jagex is committed to its legacy players. So I would keep those around. Mm-hmm. And following on from that, I think that you could use the legacy high score tables in a way to enable questing on certain, or rather on your characters, regardless of what prestige level you were. So that means if you had already got, you know, 99 runecrafting once, and there, you know, some days a quest that requires 90 runecrafting, then you're going to be able to complete that quest using your legacy high score table.
Right. Yeah, I think that's very important because, you know, you don't want to have high-level players, you know, resetting all their skills and a new thing comes out and, you know, they can't get to it, you know, for another year until they max or, you know, what have you. I definitely think, like, requirements like that should be kept with the legacy just for gameplay, you know, not necessarily just for the sake of having legacy and keeping that alive, but just, you know, for a gameplay mechanic other than, you know, being able to surpass and achieve that top spot, you know, just having the quest requirements or other things like that.
So. Yeah. And the fourth thing that I would do with Prestige Mode is that, you know, comes from the discussion that MajorBit and I had, where we would actually incorporate some milestones along the way at the various Prestige levels, you know, whether they be cosmetic or little extra perks, as we talked about a couple of episodes ago about how to actually make Prestige worthwhile. The example I gave was that, you know, once you reach a certain Prestige level in farming, your crops would only get diseased 5% of the time compared to whatever they get diseased by now. It's not necessarily mm-hmm. game-breaking, and it's not content that you need to grind for, but it definitely gives you
a nice little perk.
Yeah, something to aim for. So I guess you could call them perks in a way then, that they would have to be tailored towards each skill. So mm-hmm. that would definitely be in there. And just a bit of clarification for the resetting with the X amount of bonds, that would reset you to whatever your current XP is. Because remember, you get XP as you prestige on, but that XP will continue to be added to the legacy high score table. So if you prestige as soon as you got level 99, you would continue on all the way. So, I don't know, I was thinking maybe somewhere along the lines of 5 or 10 bonds to reset it and knock off your prestige level just once, just because of, you know, what a major decision that would be to make. So,
right.
Those are probably the four things that I would like to see in my version of prestige mode. But as I read earlier, JAX says they have some ideas about how this could be implemented, so I'm really eager to see what they have to say.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when you put stuff in the hands of Jagex, they have the whole macro view of how the next year is going to look, the next 2 years, the next 5 years for RuneScape. So they know what's going to work and what won't work. So that's why I've stressed numerous times to people who don't support Prestige Mode, and I said, let's just have a discussion and let's see what Jagex comes up with and what they would suggest, because you and I aren't game designers. So I'm really glad that they are going to be bringing their own ideas into this.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Anyways, thank you, MageBit. And the last one from Wiley. You want to take this one?
Yeah. All right, Wiley here. If you were to live in Gilanor and had to choose a town or city to live in, which would it be and why? Examples: Falador for its security, Miscellanea for their community lifestyle, or Port Sirim for their proximity to the Cabbage Patch.
Wiley likes his cabbages, eh?
Oh, I guess so. For me, I don't want to be too much of a cop-out, but I would probably live in Varrock, probably because that's some of my fondest memories when I first started the game. I really like just that whole environment, you know, the layout, just sort of the atmosphere. It, you know, really got me into the whole, like, medieval fantasy. And it, I think it really captured that, you know, back in the 2004 graphics and all that, and all of its glory. It's really sort of, it really hooked me into the game. You know, Lumbridge is obviously pretty lackluster in terms of scenery and just, you know, like a large city. And that was the, you know, Varrock was the biggest, or the, you know, the first, like, major big city that, you know, I got to. And I did a lot of mining, you know, south of there, and I spent a lot of my early years, so to speak, in Varrock. So I think Varrock pretty much embodies everything that is RuneScape, and, you know, everybody that, you know, has played or heard of RuneScape knows about that, and that's kind of that really is sort of the capital, you know, of the game. So I think that would probably be where I would reside. Otherwise, I've always liked the Elflands, just sort of the atmosphere there as well. Not necessarily the poison wastes and whatnot, but just the nice little secluded, serene areas, you know, like Ledia and obviously Elf City is a little busy, but you know, just sort of the nice forests and what have you. But yeah, those are probably be my two. So,
all right. Well, I'm definitely going to back you up on the Elflands and Turan and Laledia in general. You know, that was always a favorite place after Underground Pass and mm-hmm. Roving Elves and the lead-up, of course, to Plague's End with that. So that was a nice place, and it pretty much encompasses the skills that I like: herblore, farming, woodcutting, fire-making, that kind of thing. And of course we have the tree patch in the Ledia, and all we need still somewhere in the Elflands is a full allotment patch and a tree patch, though I guess we can't be asking for that now, since it would probably be classed as a two-day trip or so if you were making your way through the forest there and ended up going through Pristinus in order to accomplish that, going to the big city, so to speak. So I definitely say Tyrannan and Laletia for that. Failing that, probably Catherby once again, just for the landscapes and how it looks in the NXT game client.
There you go.
Way back when Jagex was still doing the Players Gallery, somebody remade Catherby in the Source engine, and it looked an awful lot like what it looks like now inside the NXT game client. So I'm going to see if I can find that in one of the old Player Gallery things, but it basically gave us what RuneScape could look like prior to the launch of RuneScape HD and NXT. This is how old this Player's Gallery image was. Some of you guys might remember that out there, but if you don't, I'll see if I can find it and plop it in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com.
There we go.
All right. Well, that's it for questions this week, everyone. Thank you for sending in your questions and discussion topics. If you want to get one to us, you can email it to questions@rsbnb.com. We take both the audio questions and the text questions there. We like our audio questions. Or you can call our text to 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And finally, you can send us a DM on Twitter at RSBNB. We take DMs from anyone, so direct messaging is another simple way of getting them to us. So all you need is a phone to engage with us at RSBNB Update, and we will get your question on the show. So we look forward to those.
Indeed.
All right, so moving on to tech news this week. Google held their annual Google I/O conference, which is in the conference where they unveil what they're going to be focusing on for the next year. And this year had a pretty simple theme, and that is the theme of automation and virtual assistants. So basically, at Google I/O this year, they unveiled the Google Assistant, Google Home, Allo and Duo, and Android N, Wear, and some more on their virtual reality stuff. So starting from the top here, basically the Google Assistant is Google brought to your voice. So the idea is that it basically will look at what exactly is going on the internet and then take your voice queries and then translate them to the appropriate language if you need to do that, and then basically give you what you are expecting to receive. So for example, if you're looking up reservations for a restaurant or, you know, just some information on the various play that might be going on, this Google Assistant will be able to do that. And rather than doing it through text, it will be basically two-way dialogue. So this is basically taking the search part of Google Now and bringing it to, well, your phone, your browser, and who knows what else Google will have in the future. So that's one side of it. And then the second side is Google Home, which is a voice-activated product that brings the Google Assistant to any room in your house. And it's pretty much like an Amazon Echo. You just dock it, and then you can say your queries, and then it will play it back to you, play music, check on the flights, set timers for ovens, that kind of thing. So as you can see, this is kind of the direction that Google wants to go in. Rather than moving away from search and mobile, they are moving towards making Google a part of your day-to-day lifestyle. What do you think?
Interesting.
Yeah.
It goes to the whole fear of AI taking over way too much. I think it really is a quality of life thing, especially with the whole, the phone integration with, you know, because right now, obviously being in the field that I'm in, there's a lot more products coming on the market that are affordable that contribute to the whole smart home archetype. So, you know, your garage door opener being from your phone, your light switches being controllable from your phone, sort of going in that general direction. So I think it'll be interesting that they're focusing on this to see where it goes and see if it actually takes off. Same with, you know, virtual reality and stuff. You know, all these things are coming onto the market, and it's very interesting to me because I think that they're cool objects or cool concepts, but sometimes the reception isn't as what you would think. So I'm interested to see.
Yeah, and I mean,
how they approach it.
Early prototypes for these two, so we don't know exactly how accurate they'll be. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Google is known for being able to take a market and completely dominate it. And I have to stress to people that, you know, if you are at all concerned about privacy, you will stay away from anything Google related. So this is, you know, just a standard warning to everyone out there. And I mean, I'm sure everyone knows that if you are on Google, you are obviously prone to being monitored in your searches and whatnot. But, you know, it's just this kind of thing where technology is becoming a part of us that there's no escaping from it.
Mm-hmm.
So just the, you know, the standard thing out there with that. But I honestly don't think there's anything to fear with this.
No.
The next thing is the Allo messaging application, which is included in the Google Assistant. So basically this looks like an updated version of Hangouts, but there's no mention of Hangouts here. So I'm wondering if this will at some point replace Hangouts. So it's basically taking what we saw earlier with the Skype and Facebook bots and kind of just incorporating them straight into conversation, which I guess is the way people are wanting to go with things. So
yeah, I guess we'll find out.
I mean, the example they give is they say, let's get some Italian food, and it suggests some Italian food. So I don't know. I personally feel that chat applications should just be a chat application. And if you want to look something like that up, you go to, you know, Siri, Google Now, et cetera, or even just, you know, plain old Google and do that. But that's just me.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think. I think what they're trying to push, it's throwing up a red flag for me for just more advertisements. And it's like,
at the end of the day,
you don't want it to come to the point where you're texting your friend and you're like getting ads while you're texting. Like that's not fun. But I think that's sort of the corporate way that they're thinking. So kind of in the back of my mind,
But hey, you asked for it, right?
Gosh,
you asked for it. You asked about that pizza. You wanted to know where you get that pizza from. So that's why it's telling you about all the local pizza places.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it though, is, you know, I don't really want to have it's kind of like you're talking face to face and all of a sudden you get some guy popping out of the closet. Oh, I heard you needed to get your oil changed. Well, it's like, really, leave me alone, you know? So that's kind of where
I stand
with that.
Yeah. Let's hope it won't be that. And it'll have to be,
too much invasive, I guess. For,
you know, a button where you actually press it to search, which I think is something that they would do. So
yeah,
should be okay in that regard. Then there's also Duo, which is basically one-to-one video calling, except it's geared for all kinds of networks, and the other person is able to see you when you're calling. So if I were to call you, it would show what my camera is seeing before you pick up, so you can basically get a live photo of who's calling.
Okay.
I mean, okay, once again, I think this could have been done in Hangouts, but it's certainly an interesting thing to think about.
Sure.
Aside from that, they're also going to be having a competition to name Android N, so you can basically decide the dessert that Android N will be named after. I don't know what it would be, but okay if they want to do that. VR and a whole bunch of interesting things. So obviously this is the direction that Google's going, and I think that we're going to see a totally different direction from Apple and Microsoft this year. Well, we already saw a different direction from Microsoft, but definitely from Apple. So,
yep.
All right. And the next piece of tech news is a follow-up to last week's story regarding Facebook and their alleged charges of bias against conservative media sources. So this week, Mark Zuckerberg had a meeting with a bunch of right-leaning individuals from the United States, and basically this whole meeting was served as a purpose to ensure that Facebook will be a neutral platform and listen to the concerns that these people had. Basically, here's a quote from after the meeting. "It doesn't make sense for our mission or our business to suppress political content. I know many conservatives don't trust that our platform services content without a political bias. I wanted to hear their concerns personally and have an open conversation about how we can build trust." So, I don't know. What do you think? You think that Facebook is on the right tracks to mending fences with the conservative side of things?
Yeah, I mean, it's the first step for sure. Whether or not it actually goes through and is effective is another story. But, you know, the gesture is there. It's clear that he wants to make it known that they're going to be try to be as neutral as possible. Again, some wounds don't heal. But like I said, you know, it's definitely the step in the right direction. But whether or not they can come to an agreement is a whole nother ball game. So
yeah, and Zuckerberg's immediate comment on this is the reality is that Facebooks and Republicans have always been an important part of Facebook. Presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump has more Facebook fans than any other presidential candidate, he said, and Fox News drives more interactions on its Facebook page than any other news outlet in the world. It's not even close. Which is very interesting when you think about it. So, you know, I think that the best thing that we can hope for coming from this is that Facebook establishes some kind of intermediary that can look into complaints of, you know, potential bias, perhaps, or just, you know, become completely transparent about what's trending, how it trends, and then what is on its way to trending that we'll see in, you know, the various trending boxes that actually spurred these discussions in the first place. I think that would be the best way to go about this, is just to increase transparency on the algorithm side. And granted, they might not want to do that since there's the secret sauce in there that, you know, tells how much a specific like is worth and how much they know about you.
But, sure.
I think that's the only way to really create a concrete series of trust on this is to be truly transparent, which is what Facebook should do, I think, right, as the leading social platform out there.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
All right. And our final piece of tech news relates to Google Chrome. So you use Google Chrome?
I do. That's all I use.
Yeah, okay. I'm about split, but anyways, by the end of the year, in quarter four, 2016, HTML5 will be default in Google Chrome. Flash will only be default for the top 10 domains that still rely on the plugin. So this means that you will no longer be able to effectively use Flash in Google Chrome. Some of the domains that would be exempt for this are YouTube, Facebook, Yahoo, VK.com, Live.com, Yandex.ru, OK.ru, Twitch.tv, Amazon.com, and Mail.ru. Google will update the whitelist periodically throughout the year and remove sites that no longer warrant an exception based on usage, and these whitelist exceptions are only good for 1 year. So it is a way of forcing, I guess, or encouraging the network or the internet community to move away from Flash, which I think is something that everyone should be doing in today's modern world.
Yeah, I
just
agree.
Because, you know, it's something that people don't need to worry about when they're using a browser because, oh, I have to update Google Flash now, or rather Adobe Flash, to be secure, which, I mean, I stress to people, this is another reason to use Google Chrome or Microsoft Edge, is because they provide their own versions of Flash that are safe. So, and, you know, who would have thought that it would be Google that is pushing this when Apple initially said that Flash was dead when iOS 1 did not support Flash? So, I'm definitely happy about this. And, you know, as it is right now, I do not turn Flash on in my web browser, and it actually creates for a much nicer experience. You have less annoying tabs going on that start yelling at you and whatnot. So it's just a great experience.
Yeah.
So basically, the default will be that websites will have to ask you in order to run Flash content, which I think is good until Flash completely disappears.
Yeah, I agree.
Another reason to use Google Chrome, and, you know, going forward, I hope Safari comes up with something like this as well, where you can be asked to run Flash, because right now you need to install an extension to do this, and it's not built into the browser, which is kind of annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So, more reasons to use Chrome.
Indeed.
Anyways, folks, that's it for tech news. We're going to move on to the Skill of the Month update right now. And that is our woodcutting skill of the month. Sorensen 57 still in first place with 15.6 million XP gained. We also did have a lead change this week. Sorensen 57, I mean the RR man, sorry, is currently in second place with 6.7 million XP gained. And Parnassius remains in third with 4.8 million XP gained. So interesting lead change there for number two. Remains to be seen if Sorensen can be caught with what looks like about 11 days left in the month. Probably not.
Yeah.
Unless he were to just stop.
Yeah, I think he pretty much secured his lead, but it's always interesting to see with that last week coming up. Everybody does their own thing, so we'll have to find out.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, you know, this is the woodcutting skill of the month, so it's obviously
endurance.
A case of endurance and, you know, what you can do in terms of auras and how much time you can actually spend in the game. So
indeed.
Going to be interesting.
Yep, yep.
So, I believe we got some achievables of the week now.
Oh, we do. First of all, we got Touchpad Pro coming in with 120 Dungeoneering, and that was May 15th. And that is actually a very... I have mad respect for that because it was quite the hike for me to do. I spent most of my, I would say, latter two bonus experience weekends doing it, and obviously whenever there is a Dungeoneering bonus promo, whether it be just like the Mad May weekend type deals. But yeah, I've definitely had my fair share, and definitely enough probably for everybody listening of Dungeoneering. So kudos to you, my friend. And then we have Elkenna? Yeah, Elkenna coming in with 99 defense on May 14th, so that is awesome as well. And normally we don't do this sort of thing, but I figured I would throw it in because when I was logging in to do my farming run earlier in the show, it popped up in my little chat box, but a div actually just hit 100 million thieving XP, and that was just a few, actually about an hour ago. So congrats to him as well. So awesome achievements. Again, love the 120 Dungeoneering, 99 defense, and 100 million thieving XP. All awesome, and I can't wait to see what you guys can pull off next week. Yeah, good job, guys.
Indeed. Good job. Good job. Yeah, 120 Dungeoneering, 99 defense, and 100 million in any skill is a great thing to talk about, so well done all around. Okay, it's time for the pick of the week. This week I got another iOS application for you guys. This one's a 99 center, so it's not completely free, but it does have a nice interface, and you can connect it to a speaker system if you need ever some kind of white noise. And this is called Peace. It's basically a sound generator for iOS that allows you to build any kind of soundscape that you would like. They have a number of set ones, like, for example, Tropical Forest. I don't know if that's loud enough, but you can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can basically choose each audio level so that you can turn things off and then turn things down. So, like, let's say, for example, you just wanted the birds. You could turn everything off except for the birds, and then you just get the birds. Then if we turn the birds all the way off, we can go back up, and then you can just turn the waterfall on, and there you go. I always like the sound of running water.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a number of preset options here. Thunderstorm. I don't know who likes thunder, but okay. Bonfire. Reading, which simulates a coffee shop. I'm not sure why you would want that either, but it's there as an option. And then baby sleeping is just water and some fire. So it's an interesting little application. Plug it into a sound device, make some white noise before going to bed if you want, some water and some wind. And then I know some people like to sleep with just some white noise in the background, but you can customize it with this, hook it up to your speakers, and away you go. So that's on the App Store for 99 cents, and it is called Peace. Link is in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. So there you go.
Alrighty, sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are always nice to have, and this has been the nicest presentation that I've found so far. The only thing I don't think that this one has is a sleep timer, which some people might want. So that is a bit of a drawback. But I'm sure you could probably have a sleep timer on your speaker, perhaps, maybe. So
right.
You can do it that way. Anyways, that's called peace. So what have you been up to this week, Dave?
RuneScape-wise, really not a whole lot. I apologize to everyone that, you know, is so interested in my interesting endeavors of doing my farming runs, but I really haven't had time to do that. Like I said, you know, being the time of the year that it is in my industry, it's actually pretty hectic getting plans and all kinds of paperwork and stuff together for people that are, you know, coming with their tax returns and wanting to build homes and stuff like that. So alas, I have not really had any time to devote to RS. But, you know, it really is just sort of logging in, doing farming runs. I've actually fallen behind a week on my strange rock hunting. So that's never a good thing. Hopefully I'll be able to catch back up on that next week. But yeah, it's really just farming runs and sort of keeping me engaged with that. But, you know, real life comes first. So, you know, we all have our obligations. So that's kind of where I've been at this week. So hopefully next week I can sort of catch a breather and be able to, you know, catch back up in my RS endeavors. So.
All right. As for me this week on RS, you know, just continuing the invention training with Chopping Crystal, which I'm going for level 60, and, you know, I got 50, but we'll go for 60 and then see from there. But I also spent some time at the Dark Beasts, gaining inspiration to make my sprinkler with the, what's that weapon called that we got from River of Blood? The augmented
one. The Sun Spear.
Yeah, the augmented Sun Spear. It's got some other name to it. But I spent some time there doing that. And I think Dark Beasts are the fastest for ranged. I'm not 100% sure. I have to look into all that again. But I recall them being fairly decent. There might have been something else discovered as for what is fast. But that's a topic for another day. In addition to that, herb farming runs and also looking at other ways of, you know, getting the invention components. And I'm still proud to say that I spent actually my first 100K GP on invention when I bought some Addy two-handed swords to disassemble. So that was actually the first amount of actual GP that I've sunk into invention. Oh, and there was also 200K worth of bowstrings. So I've sunk only 300K in getting level 57 so far. So I think that's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, that's about it for me this week on RS. You know, I've always entertained by the great people in Clan Chat at Clan Quest. So if you enjoy questing and you're looking for a clan, Clan Quest is probably the one to look into. Or if you just want to chat with us, we have the Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, where we've seen a good number of you podcast listeners come in and join us and chat with us. So you can do that, Friends Chat, Bits Bytes. Though, I don't think there's anything else for us to discuss this week. I think that about covers it.
I think that's it.
Alrighty, well, we will see you next week to discuss Kindred Spirits. Wink, wink.
Should be a good time.
All right, see you next week, everyone. Thank you for sharing your time with us.
Alrighty, see ya.